BBC Radio Sussex. Travel.
It's time for the travel, and Sylvie Blackmore has the travel for us. Wham, and I'm your man. Hello, how are you? This is Bibi Lynch on BBC Radio Sussex and BBC Radio Surrey. Although we're going to call me Barbara Lynch for the rest of the show. I can't believe I got Sylvie's name wrong. I'm such a fool. So she has to call me Barbara or Betty, but not Bibi. I apologise. You'll be unsurprised to know that a lot of the news today that we're going to be chatting about, it's about coronavirus. So the coronavirus infection rates in the UK are surging. The government has been warned that the UK is heading for 50,000 coronavirus cases a day by the middle of next month, with as many as 2,000 deaths a day the following month if action isn't taken to reduce the rate of infection. The number of cases, and they're currently at 6,000 a day, has doubled in the last week, with fears it will continue to double every week unless measures are introduced to tackle the rise. England's chief medical officer, Chris Whitty, says getting on top of the problem will take time.
We should see this as a six-month problem that we have to deal with collectively. It's not indefinite. Science will in due course ride to our rescue. But in this period of the next 6 months, I think we have to realise that we have to take this collectively very seriously.
There were no politicians at today's news briefing. Instead, Professor Whitty was joined by the government's chief scientific advisor, Sir Patrick Vallance. He said just 8% of the population have had the virus, leaving the vast majority vulnerable to infection. On a more positive note, Sir Patrick also raised the possibility a vaccine could be ready by the end of the year.
We don't yet know that they will work, but there is increasing evidence that it's pointed in the right direction, and it's possible that some vaccine could be available before the end of the year in small amounts for certain groups. Much more likely that we'll see vaccines becoming available over the first half of next year.
On Friday, the Surrey Borough of Spelthorne was put on a COVID-19 watch list. This means the government sees it as an area of concern due to the rise in infections. John Bortflower is the leader of the council there.
So far at the moment, there doesn't seem to be a pattern within Spelthorne of incidents. And I'm sure that they're working on the data to try and find out more detail on that. And whatever advice we are given from the government, we will act on and keep our residents safe as possible. I think people may be slightly more relaxed about wearing the masks as much as possible. And I think everybody needs to be aware and keep the masks on, keep washing your hands, and keep safe. And I think people need to really concentrate on this now.
Leslie McCabe was reacting to the news that Spelthorne is on the COVID-19 watch list this morning. And she spoke to the Labour County Councillor for Stanwell and Stanwell Moor, Robert Evans. Keith Urban and Superman. Bit arrogant. Let's take a look at the travel. And it's Sylvie Blackmore, Texas and Black Eyed Boy. Now, if you drove through Sussex over the weekend, you may have been stuck in roadworks on the A23 that caused chaos.
It was absolutely horrendous. I did not expect to be sitting on the A23 for, I think it was over 5 hours.
The road was closed completely between Bolney and Hickstead for work. And as you heard there, people have told us they were stuck in traffic for more than 5 hours over the weekend. Victoria Boltwood says she was advised by the police to feed and change her one-year-old baby on the side of the road.
I didn't know it was going to happen before we realised it was too late, and we were trapped in the part where you can't get off and you can't take an exit. So we had to just sit it out, really. And of course, yeah, it was a bit scary because I was running out of water for her and I had only so many snacks that would keep her happy. And at one point, I thought about abandoning the car and just taking her in the pram to the nearest village, because I was like, she's not going to sit in a car seat. And plus, she shouldn't be in a car seat for more than a couple of hours. So it was a bit of a daunting afternoon, and I was just trying to get through it using music and my phone to keep her happy every now and again. But then, of course, battery life, and it was just absolutely horrendous. And we've only just got home, so I just wish I'd have known about it, because I would have gone a different way. So that's the main thing that we're all a bit angry about, is we didn't have a clue this was even happening, let alone that it was going to be that long that we had to sit and wait. I think it was about 1 mile we went, and it took an hour just to move a mile. And there was other ladies on the road that were running out of fuel, and they were worried they were just going to have to leave their car. I mean, it was just absolute chaos.
Lots of people have got in touch with us about just how bad it was. Dan tweeted, "No traffic management, women and children in the road, dangerous and appalling." Stephen said he travelled 2 miles in 2 hours, while Gary said he missed a flight to Cairo for work. Appalling planning, he said. Two people who were trapped are Richard from Eastbourne and Kate from Derbyshire, and they spoke to Alison Ferns this morning. Richard, let's start with you first. How long were you stuck there?
Well, good morning, Alison. No, it wasn't as bad as Victoria. I was actually travelling up from Eastbourne to Crawley on Saturday morning. And as the soundbite that you had pointed out, there's been no notification whatsoever about that planned works. You would expect maybe an illuminated sign down in Brighton to actually say that this work was being carried out. But no, we're all left to kind of like scratching our heads thinking it was some kind of an accident, and eventually you come across these roadworks signs giving you some hope that you're getting somewhere near to the end. But yes, it was the actual traffic had to go up the Hickstead slip road, and of course that's not a straight piece of road. You've got two roundabouts to go across, so you've not only got the traffic from the A23 and from Burgess Hill squeezing into one lane, but then you've got the actual traffic from those villages as well trying to get through that area and then joining back onto a single lane by Bolney whilst they were doing that the central reservation roadworks and replacing the barriers.
That's the frustrating thing, isn't it? If you'd have known about it in advance, you could have planned a different route.
Well, exactly. I mean, for myself, I could take the A22 rather than the A23. And, of course, that's what I did to actually get home. But it was amazing the amount of traffic that was building up southbound as well. And I got in contact with the radio station as well. They were saying it was about a 20-minute wait. And I had to kind of recorrect and go, no, it's about an hour. And actually to say what the actual works that were being carried out.
Nightmare. Now, you were on your way to work. What time did you eventually arrive?
Well, I was supposed to get there for 9 o'clock because I work in a school and the caretaker was actually opening up specially for me. I got there at 11 o'clock, to say the least. Rather a bit of a nightmare.
Oh, absolutely. As I say, Kate lives in Derbyshire, but she was visiting people near Haywards Heath. You got stuck as well. For how long?
We got stuck for 4 hours, which is usually our entire journey time. So we were actually down at Shoreham. We visit family down there, and Shoreham, there's a beach at Shoreham, and it's easier to socially distance and have visits. So, we'd been down there for the day. There was just nothing. I think, you know, Richard was saying there was just nothing on the approach to it at all. You didn't realise until it was
too late and you were stuck going nowhere. We've also heard about, you know, women and children, you know, in the road. Did you see that?
Yeah, it was chaos really. And it felt really unsafe because there were motorbikes that were going up the middle at some speed because obviously they're smaller, and people out of their cars. So it's not... it didn't really feel very safe. We did manage to pull over on a parking lay-by for my little boy to have a wee.
But bless him, a little wild wee.
This
is the problem, because how old's your little boy?
He's 5.
So you can get away with it when you're 5. It's when you're a bit older, it's more of an issue.
Yeah, there's no way I was going to manage that. But I managed to cross my legs. Not bad after 2 children.
No, I'm very impressed with your pelvic floor, Kate. Well done you. Absolute nightmare. Were you stuck in these queues on the A23? As I say, we have got a call into Highways Agency to try and find out just what went wrong.
How did Alison Ferns go from traffic to a wild wee? I love her so much. So as Ali said, we did. Since then, we've heard from Highways England. And a spokesperson has said the northbound A23 was closed over the weekend to allow essential bridge maintenance to be carried out to keep the A23 safe and reliable. We worked with the police to speed up traffic on the diversion route to reduce congestion on Sunday evening. We always recommend drivers checking the travel before setting off to be aware of any roadworks or incidents that may affect their journey. Let's take a look at the weather with Nina Ridge.
Thank you very much. It's going to be a fine evening and then overnight tonight dry with some clear spells, a bit of patchy cloud, and we could see some mist and fog forming into the early hours. Temperatures dropping to around 10 or 11 degrees. Tomorrow morning, any mist and fog should clear by mid-morning, and then it's going to be another dry day with good spells of sunshine. Feeling warm as well. Temperatures for many up into the mid-20s. Through parts of Surrey, we could see highs of 24 or 25 degrees. But that's the last of the warm weather. All change on Wednesday. We'll start to see low pressure moving in from the west. With those fronts, we'll see a lot more cloud around. There'll be some showers, even longer spells of rain. Wednesday is going to be a breezy day with daytime temperatures of 17 or 18. It's then colder still on Thursday and Friday. Still expecting a scattering of showers. Some of those could be on the heavy side, but afternoon temperatures of just 13. If you'd like more details on your forecast for the weekend and beyond, then details to 14 days can be found at the website bbc.co.uk/Sussex or Surrey.
BBC Radio Sussex. Travel.
And here's Sylvie with the travel. Phil Collins and Two Hearts. Was it Phil Collins who apparently dumped someone by text? Was it him? I mean, you've got to have a big old heart to do that. Two average size ones. Oh, football. So, it was a superb all-round performance from Brighton and Hove Albion, wasn't it? As they comfortably beat Newcastle United yesterday. Here are some of the highlights courtesy of our commentary team, our brilliant commentary team, Johnny Cantor and Warren Aspinall. Did you watch the game? What did you think? What did you think about Brighton's start to the season? Let us know. Give us a call.
BBC Radio Sussex. Call 0800 232 1045. BBC Radio Sussex.
One of my favourite songs ever. Ever? That's because I just looked at V for Vandross. Luther Vandross, Janet Jackson. The best things in life are free. Luther Vandross and Janet Jackson. So Janet Jackson, I think, was going to tour in 2020. And I miss live music so much. Of course, I'm not going to see Luther, but Janet Jackson, I mean, can you imagine? Although I did go to the Warren on Saturday to see Hannah Brackenbury, Friendo Show, Friendo Station, brilliant Hannah. And it's such a great event there. They have, it's so socially distanced and it's super safe and you feel really protected and it's brilliant. And it was an absolute joy to see some live entertainment again. So there's no live music, or there's very, very little live music. And another thing that's been affected is London Fashion Week, which, if you're looking at me right now, what I'm wearing, you wouldn't think I'd have any particular interest in it. I'm wearing a stripe. I do love a stripe, an ill-advised stripe. But yeah, London Fashion Week is on at the moment. And enormous circumstances, of course, the event would see the industry's great and good. Visit the capital to see what designers are planning for the season ahead. But obviously, that isn't happening. So instead, it's mainly being done online. This morning, Leslie McCabe spoke to Vaishali Raghunathan from Woking. Her couture collections are being showcased during the week. That was Vaishali Raghunathan speaking with Leslie McCabe this morning.
BBC Radio Sussex. Travel.
Let's take a look at the travel. Sylvie Blackmore has the latest for us. End of the line by the travelling Wilburys. So let's return to our top story. Stark warnings today about coronavirus in the UK.
Cases are increasing. Hospitalisations are following. Deaths, unfortunately, will follow that. And there is the potential for this to move very fast.
The government's top scientist and chief medical officer have publicly set out their joint warnings of thousands more deaths soon without new measures to stop the surge in the virus. They've held their own press conference without politicians. The chief scientific advisor, Chris Vallance, says the epidemic is now doubling every 7 days.
Let's say there were 5,000 today, it would be 10,000 next week, 20,000 the week after, 40,000 the week after. And you can see that by mid-October, if that continued, you would end up with something like 50,000 cases in the middle of October per day. 50,000 cases per day would be expected to lead a month later, so the middle of November, say, to 200 plus deaths per day. And of course, the challenge, therefore, is to make sure that the doubling time does not stay at 7 days. There are already things in place which are expected to slow that. and to make sure that we do not enter into this exponential growth and end up with the problems that you would predict as a result of that. That requires speed, it requires action, and it requires enough in order to be able to bring that down.
He was sat alongside the Chief Medical Officer, Chris Whitty, who predicted in the next few months coronavirus would be worse than the thousands of deaths caused by flu each winter.
I think everybody will realise that at this point the seasons are against us. We're now going into the seasons, late autumn and winter, which benefit respiratory viruses, and it is very likely they will benefit COVID as they do, for example, flu. So we should see this as a six-month problem that we have to deal with collectively. It's not indefinite, and as I come on to, science will in due course ride to our rescue. But in this period of the next 6 months, I think we have to realise that we have to take this collectively very seriously. For many people, this remains a mild infection. But as you move up the ages, if you move into people who are more vulnerable, then the mortality rates, if people get this, rise to quite significant rates. And what we've seen in other countries and are now clearly seeing here is that they're not staying just in the younger age groups. They're moving up the age bands, and the mortality rates will be similar to, slightly lower than they were previously, but they will be similar to what we saw previously. And these are significantly greater, for example, than ordinary seasonal flu. So seasonal flu normally in the UK would on average a year kill around 7,000 people a year, tragically, and in a bad flu year, as it was, for example, about 3 years ago, it might kill upward of 20,000 a year. This virus is more virulent than flu. So the numbers people talk about are not unreasonable numbers for us to be thinking about.
Chris Whitty also dismissed any talk of doing nothing more than letting everyone decide their own risk.
A lot of people say, well, can't people just be allowed to take their own risk? The problem with a pandemic or an epidemic infection like this is if I as an individual increase my risk, I increase the risk to everyone around me and then everyone who's a contact to theirs. And sooner or later, the chain will meet people who are vulnerable or elderly or have a long-term problem from COVID. So you cannot, in an epidemic, just take your own risk. Unfortunately, you're taking a risk on behalf of everybody else. It's important that we see this as something we have to do collectively.
They ended with some good news about when vaccines are likely to be ready. Patrick Vallance again.
Many vaccines now have shown they generate an immune response of a type that ought to be protective, and several vaccines are in very late stage clinical testing aiming to show that they are both effective and safe. The UK, through the Vaccines Task Force, has got access to a number of these with a range of different vaccine technologies from a number of different companies. The UK, therefore, has put itself in a good position in terms of vaccine supply and the possibility that one of these will work. We don't yet know that they will work, but there is increasing evidence that it's pointed in the right direction, and it's possible that some vaccine could be available before the end of the year in small amounts for certain groups. Much more likely that we'll see vaccines becoming available over the first half of next year. Again, not certain, but pointed in the right direction, which then, of course, gives the possibility of a different approach to this virus.
So what's next then? Well, it's been confirmed that Boris Johnson will address the Commons tomorrow to outline his latest response to a sharp rise in coronavirus infections. The government's chief medical and scientific advisers are warning that the UK is heading for 50,000 coronavirus cases a day by the middle of next month, with as many as 200 deaths a day the following month if action isn't taken to reduce the surge. The Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, told the Commons that ministers were united in tackling the problem.
We know that the epidemic is currently doubling around every 7 days, and that if we continue on this trajectory, we could see 50,000 cases a day by mid-October. So there can be no doubt that this virus is accelerating, and we must all play our part in stopping the spread.
The Prime Minister is expected to announce a range of new restrictions after official warnings from Professor Chris Whitty and Sir Patrick Vallance about the rise of the number of infections. Labour's health spokesman, John Ashworth, told MPs that ministers must accept some blame for the increase.
None of us want to see another lockdown or circuit break, but we of course understand if one becomes necessary. But test, trace and isolate should have been fixed. That failure has left us vulnerable and exposed. Now we must act with speed to save lives and minimise harm.
Dua Lipa and Don't Start Now. So, staying with coronavirus, another aspect, of course, and we've talked about this in terms of exams, and now it's got to that stage, hasn't it, where, you know, universities are welcoming students back. My niece Lois has just started at Manchester, and I don't know how she's doing because she never returns my calls, but I'm sure she's doing well. But there's excitement, isn't there, and anxiety as universities in Sussex welcome back students.
I feel a little bit anxious, a bit apprehensive, but excited for what's to come. You just have to make the best out of the situation.
It's excitement for students, but anxiety for others over fears it could generate a surge in coronavirus cases.
Let's not forget, we have potentially 4,000 students arriving in the city of Brighton and Hove next week.
Term begins today at the University of Sussex and the University of Surrey, with students returning for the first time since the pandemic began. The University of Brighton follows suit next Monday, while at the University of Chichester, face-to-face teaching begins today. But it comes with mixed feelings. As you heard earlier, the Chief Medical Officer says we're at a critical point in the coronavirus pandemic and heading in the wrong direction. New circuit break restrictions could be announced by the government as early as tomorrow as cases rise nationwide. And a survey by the University and College Union says more than half of full-time residents in university towns fear the student return would result in extra restrictions. These students at the University of Sussex told us how they're feeling.
In terms of our whole COVID planning, we have an incident response team. We've been working very closely with public health colleagues, the Director of Public Health in Brighton and Hove City Council and the Director of Public Health in East Sussex. So we will follow, as we always have done, the advice from public health. If the advice from public health is that there is a local lockdown, then obviously we have the experience of going completely remote, because we did that in March. So we have a whole set of contingencies and plans to keep everyone safe.
That was Deborah Humphreys, the Vice-Chancellor of the University of Brighton. She said, of course, there'll be measures in place to keep everyone COVID safe. Let's hear from the students at the University of Sussex. Adam Tickle is the Vice-Chancellor of the University of Sussex, and he spoke to Alison Ferns this morning. Soul Asylum and Runaway Train, and now the girl who had all the soul, Amy Winehouse, Back to Black. Amy Winehouse and Back to Black, another artist. I can't believe I never saw Amy Winehouse live. I did see her once, not perform. She walked past me in Camden and looked at me like she recognised me, and then looked at me like I owed her money, which maybe I did. So let's have a look at the weather. After a fine evening, tonight will remain dry with lengthy clear periods and light winds. However, banks of low cloud, mist and fog will form in places later in the night. Minimum temperature 10 degrees Celsius, that's 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Tomorrow will be largely fine and dry with patchy cloud and sunny spells during the day, but cloud and showers are likely to develop overnight. Maximum temperatures 23 degrees Celsius, that's 73 degrees Fahrenheit.
BBC Radio Sussex.
Spandau Ballet and Gold. Were you a neuromantic? I was a neuromantic. I do not have the legs for pedal pushers or knickerbockers, and yet I wore them. And I had a boyfriend who wore the same outfits as me, and he was like 100 times prettier than me. 100 times. It's a very depressing memory. Let's not dwell. So this week, I'm on my road in Hove, and there's all these vans, and I'm thinking, what's going on? And I remembered that through our letterbox had been posted some notes saying there was some filming going on. And I kind of believed it. Why didn't I believe it? I still was shocked when I saw the vans. So much money goes into filming. There were like a million, honestly, I'm not exaggerating, a million vans. And there was a catering truck, and on the catering desk, what's it called? There's a craft desk. I think it's called the craft desk that they have food on. And there was a bowl of oranges. That's what I'm saying. So, yeah, there's much excitement in and around Brighton because John Sims has started filming Grace, the TV series based on Peter James's series of detective novels. She is shameless Absolutely Shameless. Sabrina Johnson and Peace. I love that song so much, and it's a real, it takes me back to when I was young and firm. I like saying young and firm because it upsets Ollie so much. Sorry, Ollie. Sorry, Ollie. I apologise. The Crusaders, Randy Crawford and Street Life. Randy Crawford, the best vibrato in the business. Come on. So last night, talking of showbiz, a socially distanced version of the Emmy Awards, TV's version of the Oscars, you know that, had took place in Los Angeles. And the ceremony, it was held behind closed doors with the audience made up of cardboard cutouts of the nominees. Most of the stars accepted their awards at home after the usual red carpet event was scrapped because of the coronavirus pandemic. The BBC's David Willis has the story of the night. Pandemies and unthank yous. I mean, that's just brilliant. Will Young and Leave Right Now. Here's the Stereophonics. Pick a part that's new. Stereophonics, pick a part that's new. Hello and welcome to the live and local bit. Let me tell you about tonight's show. Very excited to tell you the fabulous presenter, author and therapist Annabel Giles will be here talking about life and lockdown. From nine, we'll be playing Memory Radio for you, and our Alison Ferns is hosting this really gorgeous programme to celebrate world, or to raise awareness of World Alzheimer's Day. And in a few minutes, Brighton artist Tony Mills will be here to tell us about his fantastic project, 8 Miles Away. It's going to be a great couple of hours, so please stay with us. Keen and everybody's changing. I am so happy to welcome Brighton artist Tony Mills to the show. Hello, Tony.
Hi, baby. How are you?
Really good. Tony, your work is so brilliant.
Oh, you're very good yourself.
Oh, you honestly, my friend Amanda posted, this is how I heard about Tony. My friend Amanda posted on Instagram one of a print of one of Tony's paintings. And I was like, what is this? This is so gorgeous. And then she told me, or kind of said, that it was about 8 miles away. So tell us what 8 miles away is.
Yeah, so 8 miles away refers. So first of all, I live in Brighton, I should say, and I live right on the seafront. And I look out over the sea, and in the distance, I can see the wind farm, which is 8 miles away. And that's what gave the name to this initiative and to the first painting in the series.
And the idea is?
Well, the idea is a couple of years ago, living opposite me in a bus shelter, one of the beautiful bus shelters on the seafront, was a very old homeless man. And I used to watch him carry everything that he owned on his back, wearing one set of clothes in all weathers. And he made home in the bus shelter opposite me. And I just was compelled to try and do something to help him. I would take him to dinner and give him a little bit of money, but it wasn't enough. And one night when I watched him bed down for the night, I thought, I'll paint his picture, and if the picture sells, I'll give him the money. So that's what I did.
It's honestly, I think it's so lovely that you do that, because so many, I mean, I know everyone says it, but so many people do just walk by it, but it's impossible to do that, isn't it?
Yeah, I, this man, you know, it's funny, one of the lessons I've learned in life is never to judge a book by its cover, and he was a huge man with a huge beard. I know he's 55, not too dissimilar to me, but looked about 75, yeah. Really dirty. But when I talked to him, honestly, Bibby, there was a dignity and there was a sparkle there behind the outside appearance. And there was just something about him that made me feel, deep down, you're not that different, actually. And I want to try and do something to help you.
Well, I mean, there is that kind of cliche phrase, and I'm sure it's cliche because, again, like every cliche, it's true that we're only like two or three pay packets away from
yes.
something hideous happening.
Exactly.
And it's that Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you don't have a home, how can you do anything else?
And that was the thing for me. It's funny you should quote Maslow, but I thought there was a little bit of selfishness, really, because I thought, if I was in that situation, I would hope that life and society and people would notice me and try to do something to help me, because there just seemed to be a very thin line between, at one point this guy was functioning with a job and I don't know what happened, but then he wasn't. And, you know, it just made me think, we're not that different, all of us, if we're not careful. We can assume we are by just looking at how we look. But deep down, we're all the same. We're all the same.
So you did sell the painting of him to a woman in Australia, yes. I believe.
Yes, yeah. So she saw the painting. So first of all, as an artist, you never know if your paintings are going to sell. And I was slightly nervous about it, but 36 hours after I'd finished it, she saw it online and she loved it. And it reminded her of when her own son bought an Aboriginal man a cold Coke in the sun, in the heat of the Australian summer. And it reminded her of that sort of giving nature that she saw in her own son. So she bought the painting, had it shipped to Melbourne in Australia. And that started all of this off for me, really. And then people all over the world bought prints. So it's strange to think there's this dark bus shelter in Brighton that people all over the world have pictures of. So
I love this so much. And so, and what happened to this specific man?
Well, it, you know, there's a short film I've made about this, and you know, what it did was it opened doors more than the initial money, actually. The painting kind of opened some doors and got attention for the man, and it helped me work with St Mungo's and Brighton care teams and really try and come up with a plan. And you know, I've learned a lot about, I'm not an expert in homelessness, I'm really not, but what I've learned is it's a twisty turny journey, and you take one step forward and two back. But it got him off the street, it got him into a temporary home, it got him access to some money, and it started a journey for him. And it's not finished by any means, but it proved to me that you would never associate painting and homelessness together, but if we all just try to use whatever skill we've got, we can help in unexpected ways.
And there's, I love what you said earlier, which is you just, you know, you, one should never make an assumption about someone because of their circumstances or how they're looking. And there's a beauty in people we're meeting, and that's shown in your paintings too. I mean, they are honestly stunning and really moving. And the idea, I guess, so now is you're doing eight paintings?
Yeah, I thought that the man would just need more money. Not that money is the, you know, the cure for everything, but I was in uncharted waters. Yeah, it does.
In trying to find a home, yeah.
Yeah, so I just kept painting. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that a little over a year before I met the man, my 18-year-old son died unexpectedly and was nothing to do with homelessness. But I needed time on my own, and I needed time to do something that felt good again, actually. And so this was quite a selfish act, really. It was an act of somebody who's a painter who needed to paint, who was inspired by a man who looked very different from me. And one painting just made me think, let's not overthink this, let's keep going. So I have eight paintings now, all of different scenes of Brighton, which is a city I absolutely love. you know, eight miles away, eight paintings, eight homeless people. It seemed a good time to stop and see what people thought of the paintings. So that's really, for the last month, I've been getting them out there and seeing what the reaction is.
I think the film is incredibly moving. You mentioned your son in the film, and I love that as well, that something so tragic has kind of inspired something fabulous as well. You know, there's something positive from that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very individual thing, and I knew I needed something. I knew I needed to do something to look forward and feel productive and feel like there was something bigger connecting us. And so it worked for me to the point that when I finished painting number 8, I was slightly worried about stopping because yeah. I'd got so used to just doing one after another. So, the public reaction has been unbelievable. And people have bought pictures in the last month from all over the world, and New York, Nebraska, Madrid, Oslo, Sweden, Melbourne. And it's kind of
Lewis.
Really... Lewis as well, and you know, Patchen. Let's not forget those important places. But you know, it's really nice for me to think, you know, one of the paintings is a painting of two people kissing in a bus shelter in Saltdene. And strangely, a lot of people in Spain have been really drawn to this picture. So all over Madrid, there are little pictures on walls of these people, lovely people in Saltdene kissing in a bus shelter, which I think is quite nice.
Have you, please tell me, even if it's not true, just say yes. Are you still in touch with the homeless man?
I am, yes, I am. I saw him a few weeks ago, and we don't see each other all the time, but when we do, it's really emotional. So yes, I am, and that's a journey that, you know, it still continues to twist and turn, but I feel very connected to him. I really do, Bibi.
It's so incredible. How are you going to choose? So what you're doing now is you've got these incredible paintings and prints. People, you know, we'll give our info in a minute about how people can see your work and buy them, and help out that way. But you're going to choose 8 people who are affected by homelessness to benefit from the proceeds.
Yeah. So, you know, simplistically, I was thinking 8 paintings, 8 people. It's not difficult, unfortunately, to identify in Brighton people who would be very deserving of the money. I think on average 88 people have to sleep rough every night in Brighton. And I'd been working with St Mungo's for a long time on this, but they've been unbelievably good. But what they can't do is they can't get funds to individual homeless people. So what I'm actually trying to do now is to find a reputable Brighton homeless charity that could do that. I could simply give the funds to any number of homeless charities, and they all do great work, but I want to try at this point to stick to my intention, 8 paintings, and the money go directly to 8 people to try and kickstart a jump for them. So I'm currently trying to find the right charity to help me do that.
Oh, well, hopefully they're listening.
Yes,
and hopefully they can see your work and just be so moved by it and inspired by it. So how can people see your work?
Well, so if they go to my website, tonymills.com, and they can see the 2-minute film there, and they can see the pictures. I need to give out a little bit of a warning about the film. Even though it's only 2 minutes, it's quite a dangerous film. I had a message last week from a 70-year-old lady in Florida in the USA, and she said that she loves the film so much that she watches the film several times a day alone and sometimes with her friends. So I don't think even Banksy can claim that, really. I am the poster boy for the Florida retirement generation. And
Tony, take it. Take it, Tony.
Yeah, for sure. I'm getting T-shirts printed.
I honestly think the project is just... It's such a gorgeous project anyway, but it's the gorgeous icing on that fabulous cake is how brilliant your work is too. So honestly, I just think it's really brilliant. It's so lovely to speak to you. So yeah, tonymills.com, and you're on Insta as well at tonymills1411.
Yes, I am, and Facebook and all the usual places. So thank you very much.
Okay, let us know how it goes.
Yeah, will do, Bibi. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
I've never heard that before. I really love it. It was dreamy. The only thing, Travis and Susanna Hoffs from the Bangles. We have got the beautiful South coming up, and then a little bit of weather just to keep you updated, and then fantastic Annabelle Giles will be joining us. I wouldn't really do that at your wedding. I would take food from the buffet. Let's take a look at the weather for the rest of the week. It's going to be cloudy on Wednesday with showers or spells of rain, possibly heavy at times. Rain early on Thursday, then sunny spells develop, but still the chance of a few showers. Breezy and cooler. Showers to start on Friday, then frequent sunny spells in the afternoon. Still the chance for a spotty shower or two. Again, it's going to be breezy and cool.
BB Lynch. BBC. Radio Sussex.
Rita Ora and Anywhere, and before that it was The Killers and Mr. Brightside. So we have a fabulous final guest for you tonight. Welcome to Live and Local TV presenter, novelist and counsellor and psychotherapist Annabelle Giles. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, how are you? You sound breathless, what are you doing?
I am, I'm sorry, I'm just running around the house. I just got myself a coconut water and then I suddenly heard your song ending and panicked. Anyway,
good. You're a fan of the coconut water?
I am. It's very good for you. It's not got any sugar in it and it's natural and it's not water. I find water really boring.
What if you do add sugar?
Oh, don't know.
I'm going to try it.
I'm not willing to try that. Okay, try. I don't know why you would, because it's quite sweet already.
Oh, I love the sweet.
It's quite sweet already.
Where are you right now then? Paint the picture, please.
I'm in my sitting room.
Yeah.
A bit tired. I've seen six clients today.
Six.
And I've had my own personal therapy too. So I've been talking to my computer for 7 hours.
Oh no, that's really bad. Thank you for joining us, darling.
Try not to be too grumpy.
No, you'll be fine. So you know, this is a bit of an off-piece question, but I will ask it because I do think this is really fascinating. When you have therapist as a therapist, that are you double guessing what your therapist is saying to you? I mean, that must be a really weird situation.
Well, not really, because I need therapy along with it. I think it should be compulsory. I think everyone should have therapy because it would solve a lot of very poor decision-making problems that we bring upon ourselves. So, no, I do it as a client. I don't, you know, sometimes we have a sort of shorthand where we say, is that your, you know, your NP or your whatever? Do you know what I mean? We use a bit of techno stuff, but not really, because I need the full client experience and I also need to know what it's like being a client. Therapist keeps me right-sized and I don't turn into God, you know.
Yeah.
Don't start thinking I'm marvellous. You know, the therapist will go, does that sound right to you, Annabelle? And I'll go, oh, no, gosh, help, what did I just say? See what I mean? So I think it's good. We don't actually have to, as a breed, we don't have to all have therapy at all. It's completely voluntary.
Oh, really?
I thought you
had to have it as a therapist.
No, you have to when you're studying. When you're a student, you have to have 40 hours a year.
Yeah.
But after you qualify, you don't need to have it again, which I think is quite dangerous.
Yeah, I do. I'd be up for 40 hours a day. I love my therapy. Do you think clients always fall in love with their therapists? I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
How weird. No, I don't at all. No, but I've heard of it happening. I think because, to be honest, now sit down and I'll tell you. To be honest, what that is, it says more about you than the therapist in that you would love to fall in, you like to fall in love with your authority figures because you put the therapist as an authority.
And we're not always.
Exactly. We're not. But you probably got a very good relationship with your mum. Something like that, maybe not. Either a very good one or a very bad one. It will be one or the other.
Let's play a track. No.
Okay.
So in the nicest possible sense, and I don't mean as glibly as it sounds, but lockdown and the pandemic, has that been good for business, in assuming people can afford
it? Yes, in an awful way, yes. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's only really for people that can afford it, which is so wrong, because actually it's people that can't afford it that need more help. But until we're paid properly to do it on the NHS or, you know, we're subsidised or something like that, we can't afford to not charge that much. Do you see what I mean? Because we're only allowed to do a certain amount of people a week. And it's in the union, if you like, that I belong to. It's 20 clients a week. So we're only allowed to do that many because your mind blows up if you do any more, because all you're hearing all day is pain and difficulty and horror and abuse and that sort of thing. So we have to work at a rate where we can afford 20 clients a week. And then don't forget, we don't work all year round. We don't get paid holidays. We don't get, you know, sickness benefits or anything like that. And so we can only see a certain amount of people. So it's kind of a bit of a, you know, a bit of a sort of catch 22, really. We need more therapists, but you need to pay them.
But six That's a day must have totally drained you then.
Well, yeah, it is a bit like that. I try and squash all mine into 3.5 days so that I at least get a Friday off and Saturday, Sunday, so that I can recalibrate my poor brain.
Yeah,
you know, which just goes at the end of Thursday lunchtime, just goes, right, that is it, Annabelle. Do not say anything anymore. Shut
give
up.
Me some coconut water and gin.
Exactly.
That's all I need.
Please. I know. Yes, it is. It's weird how mental work is as tiring, I believe, as physical work.
Oh, I
because
totally
you know
agree.
You're. Do you find that? I mean, when you leave your therapist, do you feel sort of a little bit drained and exhausted?
Or even calmly elated, but it's still a real physical response to an energy, it's a different energy zapping.
Exactly, because even having a realisation is exhausting.
Yeah.
You know, because you suddenly realise everything you've been doing up till now has been completely not correct for
isn't
you.
Isn't that a perfect feeling?
Yes, exactly. Isn't it nice to know you're making the same mistakes over and over again until someone pointed them out, and then you go, "Oh no!"
So your sessions have been so obviously I'm in masses of therapy. I love it. And
good for you.
Thank you. And we've moved from in person, face to face, to over Skype. Was that a weird adjustment for you?
Well, it was at first. I do sort of Zoom, Skype, FaceTime and WhatsApp video in that order, usually depending on the age of the person I'm talking to. Because different people have different sort of it was very different because when you're in the room with someone, there's an atmosphere in there and you can be a bit more sort of casual and laid back. I find online it's much, much more intense. So, people are really sort of if you're thinking, oh, I wonder what I'm going to have for lunch, they can see that thought cross your face. And they go, you're right. And I go, yes, fine, sorry, fine. Yeah. So it's very, very intense because you are literally eyeball to eyeball. Do you know what I mean? And as my therapist pointed out today, we're not normally, when we see clients, sitting at a desk.
Which
we are now. I mean, I've got one of those funny kneely chairs, and I realised I spent the whole lockdown kneeling. And I've got the core strength of 10 men, but it's things like that. And then also some people sit too far away, so you can see down to their waist, which you can normally, but for some reason online it looks really weird.
And isn't it weird though, because there is a barrier and yet it feels like there isn't, because you are kind of eye to eye. I think it's fascinating. Tell me about a barrier.
Well, the barrier, I think British people culturally quite like the barrier because they're in the comfort of their own home. So they don't need to travel anywhere or get a parking ticket or anything like that. But also the barrier gives you a little bit of distance so that I find people are more willing to sort of open up, cry, rant and rave online than they are in person. Because when you're in person, you have to mind the other, you have to take the other person into account. But online, they're just talking about themselves to a screen. Do you see what I mean? Yeah. So they don't have to worry about me.
Yeah.
They just go for it. I had a lady today on WhatsApp video, screaming her head off, bless her. And she just suddenly said, I don't know why I'm saying this all to a tiny little phone. Because you can create it, you've got to want to, but you can. Yes, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, because I guess today's news feels like we might be kind of going backwards.
I haven't even seen it.
Well, we might be. I mean, who knows? It looks like things are going to get a bit stricter. Yeah, exactly. I mean, how is this going to impact on people? Because I think the restriction and then seeming freedom and then maybe again. I mean, is that worse?
I don't know. You see, it's very funny, isn't it? Because at first, I mean, I don't know about you, but I was sort of okay with the lockdown. In fact, I needed a bit of a break. Do you know what I mean? I think a lot of people sort of took an extended holiday or something. I just sort of thought, oh, phew, we don't have to rush around as usual. But actually it turned more intense. But we've been through phases, haven't we? There was a time when everyone put on loads of weight because all they did was watch Netflix and eat chocolate. And then there was a time when everyone went, oh, my God, I need to exercise immediately. And everyone was out running up and down the seafront here and, you know, going insane. And now it seems that people can't sleep. Lots and lots of people are having trouble getting to sleep and then staying asleep. And my personal theory, which is based on absolutely nothing, is that it's the brain, our brains aren't taking as much in as they usually do in order to be exhausted. You know, we're just seeing our own homes, the odd shop. Do you know what I mean? But we're not doing a full day's activities. That, and I think because a lot of people have been dieting, I went on the keto diet because I put on Hearthstone. I was expanding into a chair myself. And so I tried the keto diet and I found that having no carbs, I couldn't stay asleep for very long. Really? I was constantly waking up. Yeah, it was really weird. And someone said, try carbs and meditation. So I punched him and then tried just the carbs bit. I don't want to do that meditation. It's horrendous. You know, it's not actually. It's really effective, but it doesn't work for me because I've got ADHD. But, you know, but I think we're going through phases, but I dread, and I'm sure everyone else does, I dread going for the full lockdown again, and I don't think they'll get people to do it.
It's going to be tough to make people follow these rules.
They had, exactly. I think they had, you know, we had that chance, and then people are going, no. Don't think so.
Hey,
so
Annabelle.
I think they could do a semi-firm one. Yeah, shall I shut up?
No, don't shut up. I want you to so dreams, right? I talk about my dreams to my therapist because we really do get a lot of stuff out of them. Yeah, I keep dreaming.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me what you think about this. Yeah. I keep dreaming about Paul McCartney.
Oh well, you got a thing for older men? I don't know.
Not really.
What do you dream of him doing?
He's just around. Well, there was one dream, and we were on a roof terrace, and apparently it was Groucho Club. We were on the roof terrace, and a rock star walked by. I went, "Oh, it's a rock star." And then another rock star went, "Oh, they're all going to the same table." And then Paul McCartney leant over me, and I went, "Oh, naughty Macca," like that. That I know him. And he went, "You." Oh. And I was so thrilled because everyone looked at me, and it looked like Paul McCartney and I knew each other. That was wonderful.
Dear me. Yes. Well, I don't know. What do you, I mean, it does sound like you obviously need to be out and seen, I would say. But you like to be visible. Is that fair to say?
I think that's fair.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I've never even met you, so I've got no clue.
That's fair.
But that and a thing for older men and a concern with what people think of you. That's what I would say. But you can kill me if you like. I don't mind.
I won't.
You don't feel visible enough. That's why you're
no. I love that.
Feeling
I think
visible.
I'm totally writing that down. Can I ask you something? Yeah. I hope this isn't a cheeky question, but I do think this is fascinating. So, you know, we all know and love you. You've had a brilliant career of author and TV presenter and radio presenter. And I'll ask why you moved into counselling and therapy. But also, is it weird for your clients that it's you?
No, weirdly, I had one. I've got a new chap who started today, last week, who sort of said, "Ooh, you know, you've got a lot of power." And I said, "I don't really, what?" And he said, "Well, you know, I know about your previous career." And I said, "Well, that's fine. But what usually happens is they forget about it very quickly. Because I so love the work and I, you know, we all get very involved in it. They suddenly realize at the end. I usually say, have a go and see if you still think, oh my God, I'm talking to Annabelle Giles and it's sort of, I don't know, blocking what you're saying or trying to impress me or something like that. If you're still doing that by the end of the session, then it might well be, you know, getting in the way. And so you probably need to find somebody else. But I've yet to have anybody not sort of go, and of course, younger people, you know, people under 50, don't really know who I am at all
never,
or who I was in that career.
They don't.
Do you know what I mean?
They don't matter.
No, exactly. I know you like older people anyway. yes, it's such a giveaway. Anyway, so Paul McCartney would know maybe a little bit, but anyone else, you know, I don't know. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it doesn't usually get in the way. It can, but it doesn't stay for very long because, you know, we just get on with it. They haven't come to meet me. Some of them have. That's a different story. And they get dispatched quite quickly. You know, but most people haven't come, you know, to meet me. They've come because they like, I don't know, my entry on the directory or something. They like what I say.
Why did you retrain? Why did you go into this?
Well, TV sort of stopped me. I didn't stop TV. TV stopped me because in this country we have a highly sexist entertainment industry that likes old men with younger women or just younger women. And so, you know, TV people don't really like older ladies. And so I just sort of gradually stopped working, like the rest of the people in my generation of TV presenters. We all just sort of quietly got phased out. And I have a special needs son who I need to support and things like that. So I thought, God, I've got to find a job that I can do sitting down because I'm getting older and where looking old looks like a benefit of the job. You know, you don't want to go into the office and see someone of 20 shiny going, hi, come hi. In. You know, you want some sort of old bag and a chair, don't you?
Stop it.
Going, oh, yeah, tell me, I've done that. You know, that sort of thing. And then, but also I've had loads and loads and loads and loads of therapy myself and I know how effective it is. And how helpful it can be and how it can quite literally change lives
and
for the better.
Save lives.
And save lives, exactly. So I just fancied doing something with a bit more meaning and purpose. You know, when you're old, there's a chap called Erickson who talks about seven developmental stages of man. And he says, when you're old, you either end up with integrity or despair is your choice.
Oh.
And if you do something that is appropriate for you or that fits you or that you've always wanted or something, then you lead a life of integrity in your last 100 years. And then if you try and carry on doing what you were doing, even though it goes against the grain, you will have a life of despair.
I'm writing all this so, down.
Yeah, Erickson's fantastic.
That's amazing.
Google him. Integrity. 1K, no C. Integrity versus despair, which is why you get with older people, you either get ones who are really happy and mad and wonderful, or you get the grumpy old men at bus stops, you know. Or sort of nasty old women throw cats in bins, that kind of thing. That's because they're full of despair. They're despairing about their lives. Whereas I thought I'd do something that meant something for a change rather than just be the background to someone else's ironing on the telly.
And also, you know. So what is coming up for you? So are you, how do you, I mean.
I've got to keep seeing clients because, yeah. I have to save the world, obviously, and that's my job. But I've got another thing which I'm working on, which would be a sort of cross between presenting and counselling.
I was going to say, you combine them.
I can't say yet.
Okay.
Well, it's annoying because I'd like to be Dr. Phil. You know, in America, as a chap.
Yeah.
I'd like to do that, but they don't seem to want that over here. They just want people to shout at people and ridicule them for having bad teeth, you know, whereas I would like to do something really quite good and sensible and normal and helpful, but you know, TV's dying, isn't it, now? So, you know, I don't know if that will happen. So I'm planning on doing something a little bit similar, but where I'm the boss.
I love the way you say that.
I know, yeah. I will be making
it's not the first time you've said that, I know.
No, exactly. Oh no, they love it. I make the decisions.
But look, let us know then. Keep me informed.
I will. Well, yes. When I've got them all done and formulated, I will let you know. You'll be the first to hear, BB.
Oh, I want to be the second.
All right, the second. Right, I'll tell Ollie, your producer, first.
Tell Ollie first. Yeah. So people can get hold of you at AnnabelleGilesCounselling.com. AnnabelleGiles.com,
yeah,
and you're on Twitter at Annabelle_Giles.
Yes, _. The Twitter account is quite awful, and it's
perfect.
Of, you know, I'm very sort of rude and do a lot of swearing, anti-politics stuff. And do you know what I mean? I'm not a nice person on the Twitter one. So you're better off looking at the website.
It's like looking in a mirror, right. Annabelle.
I know. Yes, I shout a lot on Twitter.
Stop shouting.
Yes,
sit down.
Yes,
have
I will.
Little coconut. Add some vodka.
Oh, I'm going to make dinner now.
Go and make dinner, and we will see you soon.
Thing. Lovely. Thanks very much.
Bye, Annabelle.
Enjoy your dreams.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
We will see you next week, 8 till 10.